Welcome into the Doctor's Lounge. I'm your host, Dr. Hal Schurz, and every week we come to you with the best in healthcare chat radio. We talk to you about the things that doctors talk about and take great pleasure at welcoming you, Dr. Martha Boone, into the Doctor's Lounge.
Thank you for having me here this morning, Hal.
You know, we've had people on our show, authors, but never a novelist, and we've never had anybody really in here who has written a book that we're going to focus on today. So you are breaking new ground for us. Your patients know you, but the rest of the listening audience doesn't. So take a few minutes and tell us about your background, your story, where you come from, how you got here today.
My name is Martha Boone, and I grew up in South Carolina. I had the privilege of having a life where I did a lot of work on a farm. And so my people are basically salt of the earth farm people from South Carolina. Growing up like that taught me a lot about hard work, and it taught me a lot about relationships. On the farm, everybody had to work, whether you were a man or a woman, regardless of race, color, creed, or religion. We were all unified by trying to put food on the table. And so that prepared me for medicine, where we have to work pretty hard. I went to the College of Charleston, later went to the Medical University of South Carolina. Then I moved down to New Orleans and went to Tulane. And that was where I really feel like my life blossomed. For reasons that I'll never fully understand, I really love New Orleans. And it's a rich place for storytelling. The food, the culture, the music, the art, the mixing of all the different types of people. It's a little bit of a crazy place, but it makes great stories. I came to Atlanta via the Medical College of Georgia. I was there for a little while, and then I came to Atlanta to join actually your group. And I was a little too independent for group practice, so I was out by myself for about 21 years, and then recently I've been bought by a hospital system, and I am currently an employee for a hospital system. So that's been kind of my transition through the field of medicine.
You've left out a lot, and we'll try to maybe touch on a little bit of that after we've gotten a little bit into the main reason why you're here today, which is to discuss your very wonderful novel called The Big Free. Before we do, what made you decide to sit down and write a book? It's not easy to do this.
So I've been writing stories since I was about 4 years old. A lot of good fiction writers will tell you that you have to be a really good liar to even start to do fiction writing. And from childhood, anything that was happening, I would always want to elaborate to the point where I wasn't exactly sure what had happened because I had made the story so flamboyant. So it's kind of always been a part of my personality. And then as I went through medical training, I used it as a coping mechanism. Anything that would happen that would be exciting or horrifying or particularly funny or frightening, I would write stories about it. And one of my mentors at Tulane was a very famous trauma surgeon named Dr. Norman McSwain. And Dr. McSwain had been collecting my stories. I had been sending them to him for about 20 years. And he kept pushing me, you know, where's the next story, where's the next story, where's the next story. He had a stack of my stories sitting beside his Tulane green leather chair in his library on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. And he started about 4 years ago really pushing, you have to put it in a book, you have to put it in a book. And he was constantly badgering me, please put the stories in a book. And finally one day I said, I will, Dr. McSwain, if you will let me use your name as a fictionalized character. And he said, I think that would be fabulous. So I started to sit down with the stories and put them together in a book. And actually, I have enough material for about 7 books. But it is a fictionalized version of my first 6 months at Charity Hospital in New Orleans.
You know, at the end of the book where you write the acknowledgments, you spend a little bit of time writing about Dr. McSwain, and I know that he passed away before the book came out, and that must have been, you know, quite bittersweet for you.
Yes, Dr. McSwain had read most of the last edit and had approved everything. Of course, you know, he was still my professor, even though I was almost 60 years old. And he was correcting, you know, some of my medical information to make sure I had it right. But my husband and I had gone to New Orleans to visit him to kind of run through the final copy, and we were standing at the Windsor Court Hotel waiting for him, and he never showed up. And we were standing in the rain, and I was dialing his number at Tulane and calling his cell phone, and my husband, who's not a doctor, kept saying to me, well, you know, he's probably just stuck in the operating room somewhere. And I told him, I said, no, you don't understand this man. He always makes his commitments.
How old was he at this time?
He was 70. Two or three at that point. Mm-hmm. And so we went ahead and went over to Commander's for dinner, and we sat there waiting, you know, thinking he was going to call, and he never did. And 3 days later, when we were back in Atlanta, the phone rang, and it was Dr. McSwain. He was in the ICU. He had had an aneurysm. And his daughter would not let him use his phone. So as soon as his daughter gave him the phone, the first person he called was me to say, hey, I'm sorry, I missed the dinner date. And that was one of our last conversations.
Was he always Dr. McSwain to you?
Oh, yes. I mean, he was scary. This was, you know, your classic surgery professor. I mean, you better do everything right for this guy. And, you know, the outcome for the patient was really all that he cared about. And he was the perfect mentor for a young woman. I mean, they had had women go through surgery at Tulane, and they'd actually even had someone go through urology. But one of the important things about him was that he treated me like everyone else. And he saw my potential, but he did not cut me any breaks. And even as an older man, when we were able to joke and laugh about things that had happened at charity, he was still my professor.
It's funny because it's hard to make that transition. You know, I've been training people my whole life, and, you know, it's hard when they are 10 years younger than you that you're still Dr. Schurz to them. And even though you try to tell them, no, please call me Al. and it's hard for those trainees to make that transition as an equal. They never really look at themselves quite as an equal, even though they really are.
Well, very few of us would ever be his equal. This is a man who was just bigger than life. I mean, I really didn't know a lot of things about him until his funeral. I mean, he had been very involved in the military and had done a lot of training to teach, you know, the guys in the field how to take care of themselves. He was the physician for the New Orleans Police Department. I mean, this was a guy who was a full professor at Tulane and just wore many hats. I mean, people were telling stories about all kinds of things that he had done for them. And as I was writing the book, people started contacting me. I actually talked to a woman surgeon who had been working in Afghanistan, and she had been a former student of Dr. McSwain's. And when she would have a difficult case in the field taking care of our soldiers, she would Skype him and ask him questions. And, you know, it would be the middle of the night in his home on Bourbon Street, New Orleans, and he would get up and, you know, talk to her about whatever needed to be done with the patient. So he was saving lives on people he never even saw. With our military guys.
Definitely a bigger-than-life figure, wasn't he?
Yes.
You know, the question that you know, it was really, you've answered, and I pretty much knew the answer to, was, you know, whether or not The Big Free was autobiographical. And I think that you've pretty much answered that question right now on the air, that this really is a recollection of your experiences at Charity Hospital in New Orleans.
Well, it's a fictionalized version. So one of my favorite characters, the head nurse in the emergency
nurse room,
Libby.
Yes.
Yeah, Lavinia Robichaud. She is completely a fictionalized character, but she's an amalgam of all the great nurses I've ever known. And any nurse who's ever had to work in the emergency room or in the operating room with doctors when they've just gotten out of school and they think that they know everything can definitely relate to Nurse Robichaud's role in all of this. And so she was no one character, but she was a combination of about 10 different great nurses that I've known.
So beside Dr. McSwain, question that I want to have you answer, are there any other characters in the book who are pretty much real characters, or are they all made up? And because you have a whole array of very interesting people, starting with the dapper neurosurgery resident to the cardiothoracic fellow. So the story is delightful. And asked was whether or not there were any other characters in the book, real characters.
The young protagonist, Elizabeth, is based loosely on me.
I was just seeing you throughout the book when I was reading it, and every story about Elizabeth Roberts was Martha Boone.
So Elizabeth had moved from South Carolina. She was a very naive farm girl. She shows up in the emergency room the first day. She has pearls in her ears. She's wearing her grandmother's pearls around her neck. She's got on pink argyle socks, a little khaki skirt, straight out of the College of Charleston.
Was that you?
That was me. And here she is in the most difficult trauma center at that time in the United States, probably. It was like working in a MASH unit. So it was a big shock. Prior to coming to Charity, the only gunshot wound she had ever seen was some Bubba from South Carolina who'd fallen off of a deer blind and shot himself in the foot. So it was a big thing to show up there, and all of a sudden you've got automatic weapons and 9mm bullets and stuff in patients. But you'd ask about the different characters. So the protagonist is definitely loosely arranged around my experience in the first 6 months. Mm-hmm. Dr. McSwain is pretty much himself. I wanted the people who read the book to really realize the importance of the doctor-patient relationship. And so I definitely had to clean up some of the things that occurred at Charity. People who were there at the time thought it was a pretty good analogy of what was going on. Everybody said I got Dr. McSwain correct. In fact, Dr. Ken Maddox, who is another world-famous trauma surgeon and knew Dr. McSwain very well, he felt that I had his character spot on, as he put it. The nun in the clinic, she was definitely based on the nuns that ran Charity Hospital.
Was there a person who was under 5 feet who ran the clinic?
Exactly. Sister Marion was based on a real person. She was a 5 foot tall pistol who ran the clinic. She ran the Angola Prison Clinic, which was one of the toughest clinics in Louisiana. The gentleman who was the tech at the VA, uh-huh, he was also based on a real character. I think one of the things that people will see in the book is that really any doctor could have written this book, particularly mm-hmm. any surgeon. Mm-hmm. We all know these characters.
Absolutely.
We all know the types of patients. These situations are things that we're all familiar with. I mean, it's really something any of us could have written.
No, you're 100% right about that. As I was reading it, it opened up memories that I have about my experiences, which are not that different. I mean, anybody who trained at a teaching hospital, who trained at a VA hospital, you could pretty much transpose those experiences anywhere. Charity may be one of the more intense. The experiences are shared. And the big free, we've said, is Charity Hospital in New Orleans. And that was actually my next question. You know, what made, you know, there are other places that were intense. Bellevue Hospital in New York, Cook County in Chicago, Grady in Atlanta, Parkland in Dallas, Herman in Houston. I could name another dozen. What, in your opinion, made Charity Hospital stand out as the toughest place? Because you've already said that there was no place quite like it.
I think it was just simply the statistics of what was going on in the country at that time. All these hospitals that you've named have shifted around as far as to which one has the most trauma at any particular point in time. But I think in New Orleans at that time, crack had just come to the city, and basically we were in the middle of a drug war. And, you know, like right now, it may be Chicago, which has the largest number of stabbings and shootings related to drugs. At that particular point in time, it happened to be New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And it was just a city in crisis. And, I mean, there was basically wars going on over the drugs. And, you know, we were the doctors where they brought the patients at that time.
So Hurricane Katrina changed everything in New Orleans, including Charity Hospital. And the old Charity Hospital closed its doors back in, what year was that? In
2005.
Yeah. And it sits there just like a lot of the giant granite headstones in some of those New Orleans cemeteries as a monument or as a remembrance of what things were. The question that I, you know, can there ever be an experience like Charity again? You know, you talk to people who are training today and Charity Hospital is not the Charity Hospital that you describe.
Yes. I think the generation of surgeons that came before us actually had the most amazing experience in training and surgery because they did everything. I mean, if you were a general surgeon, you did brain surgery, you did orthopedics, you delivered babies. By the time our generation came along, things were splitting up into subspecialties and specialties in surgery. And so we had more technology and more information to assimilate, but we didn't have the fun of being the doctor who took care of absolutely everything. I think the young people that are coming along today, it's split up even more. It's even more technology-based. And they've actually made a lot of changes to make it a more humanitarian experience. I mean, for me, it was a calling. I knew that I would be giving up my youth, and I gave it up freely for what I thought was a calling. But it was exciting, and I, you know, wish I had been a general surgeon in the 50s so that I could have even done even more.
Well, you know, so the answer to the question is no, there can't be another Charity Hospital because things have changed and nobody really wants to go back to the way things were for a lot of reasons. But the way things were created a product, a doctor, a surgeon, who was qualified to pretty much handle anything that came their way.
The main character in my book, Elizabeth Roberts, she wanted to be the best surgeon she could be, and that was her total driving force. All of her family, even though most of them were uneducated, the big driving force in their life was to do their duty. Her uncles had been in the military, and everybody was very focused on taking care of their family and doing their duty. And when she arrived at Charity Hospital, her number one goal was to do her duty. And I think today a lot of the younger people are more interested in balance. You know, they have other goals. And, you know, time will tell which makes for the best doctoring.
So did Elizabeth Roberts go to Charity Hospital wanting to become a urologist?
In the book, no. In the book, she was there to be a general surgeon to start out with.
And what about Martha? As I know her, Martha Roach and now Martha Boone.
Yes. So she was accepted into the urology program with the requirement to do 2 years of general surgery prior to doing urology.
As most urologists in our generation were.
Yes. Yes. And I think that it was very important for both the character in the book and, you know, the author of the book to have that time. Because being a woman in a field that at that time was 98% male and is now 94% male, as the chairman of urology told me then, Dr. Blackwell Evans, girl, you better know what you're doing.
He was also a bigger-than-life person, Dr.
Yes,
Blackwell
he was.
Evans.
Yes, he was.
Did you have any trouble writing this book or just, I mean, everything just flew off the page when you were writing this?
Writing is easy for me. I wrote the entire book in about 6 to 8 weeks.
Wow.
What I don't like is the editing process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I have stacks and stacks of stories in my office that have never been edited. And that's what I would send to Dr. McSwain, the unedited versions. So I don't like the editing, but the writing is just, it's pretty easy for me.
So what are you going to do without Dr. McSwain here, sadly?
Well, I'll have to move on to other characters, which was the plan all along.
Okay. So there are more books in the works in your brain?
Yes, I've already started the second one. I'm about a fourth of the way through the process.
Can you just tell us what it's about?
Well, it's kind of about the next 6 months of all of this.
Oh, and very good.
Yeah.
Do you have a title yet, or are you still working on
it? I
that?
Do, but it's a secret.
You don't share it.
It's not copyrighted yet.
Okay, fair enough. Martha, why was it important for you to tell this story?
I feel that in our current climate, the medical profession has been a bit maligned by the media. They're very quick to talk about anything we do wrong, but they're very slow to talk about what we do right. And the relationship between a doctor and a patient is a very intimate one. It's one of trust, and it's one of honor. And I wanted to remind people, A, that being a surgeon and being a doctor is not something everyone can do. Several people that read my book who had previously not thought much of doctors were wowed and said, I can't believe what you guys have gone through. They also didn't realize, you know, how hard surgery is. I wanted to remind people that being a doctor is really a sacred honor. I mean, when a person undergoes anesthesia and lays on a bed and allows you to rearrange their organs, there is no more intimate or trusting relationship. And so I wanted to give a peek into that. I wanted to show people the humor. I mean, absolutely hysterical things happen in medicine. What could be funnier than that teaching of the male urologic exam at the VA?
And I highly recommend the book just so you can read about that, because it's absolutely true.
Another reason I wrote the book was I wanted to show that there were women who were brought early into a very male-dominated field who were treated well. I had great male mentors. I could never have done it without them. There were times when men said insensitive things because we were trying to incorporate women into a field that had been predominantly male. But my overall experience was that the men at Tulane Surgery and Tulane Urology were champions for me. And you can't be meek and mild-mannered to be able to make those decisions. So I feel like the training should be tough. For you to have the privilege to cut on other people when they're under anesthesia, you should have to run a gauntlet to be able to get there to do it. And if you're not willing to do that, then maybe that's not the right job for you. And I know that's kind of old-school thinking, but it really worked for me. I mean, one of the things I saw at Tulane and at Charity was everything was about the outcome for the patient. Nobody cared about anybody's feelings or sensitivities. All we cared about was getting a good outcome for the patient.
Let's just bring this, you know, upbeat again. Did you really fall asleep in your food at Commander's Palace?
Yes, I did. I had the fun time of taking Miss Ella of Commander's Palace fame a copy of my book and dropping it off about a month ago. So the experience there, you know, trying to have a date, that was one thing. I mean, when you were a tired intern and you have a sense that you're supposed to go out and do things that young women are doing, like dating, but yet you're so tired that you're trying to choose between food and the bed. So the Commander's Palace story was completely correct.
Oh, that's just too rich. with crab in your hair and
crab remoulade.
that's just too much. So when Hollywood comes calling, you know, let me just, before I say that, you know, when I read this book, it was kind of like I think that people will like it because people have an appetite for this kind of insider look into medicine. You know, we've had ER, now we have Grey's Anatomy and Chicago Medical, and it reminds me very much of a very popular book when we were young people called The House of God, which was the story of medical training at Beth Israel Hospital in Boston. And this is the counterpart. This is a female surgical version of that kind of story. So getting back to what I just started to say, when Hollywood comes a calling, because they certainly did for the House of God, who is going to play Elizabeth Roberts?
Oh my gosh, I have no idea. Someone really hot.
I could see Jennifer Lawrence playing Elizabeth Roberts.
That sounds great. I would like for Nurse Lavinia Robichaud to be Queen Latifah. And I would definitely like this to be done by Mr. Tyler Perry, since he's from New Orleans.
Well, you know, he's here in Atlanta.
So if anybody knows how I can get the book to Tyler Perry, please hook up a girlfriend.
Well, we might be able to get a book to Tyler Perry, and he's here in Atlanta, and he could sit down with you, and maybe you can go to, maybe not Commander's Palace, but another equally nice restaurant, and not fall asleep and tell him about your story.
I would love that. That would be my goal. I think one of the books I should write is crazy things that people have said to me during examinations, because people get nervous and they just say all kinds of things. I mean, you could not make it up.
Well, write that book and we will have you back here in the doctor's lounge. Martha, it was a real honor, pleasure, and privilege to have you here today. And I hope that at some point you'll come back into the doctor's lounge.
Thank you so much. You're a great doctor and I'm honored to be here.
Well, thank you.